గీతా 9.25 యాంతి దేవవత దేవాన్ పితృన్ యాంతి పితృవత భూతాని యాంతి భూతేజ యాంతి మద్వ్యాజి నోపి మాం. హియర్ కృష్ణ ఇస్ స్పీకింగ్ అబౌట్ ది ప్రిన్సిపల్ ఆఫ్ రెసిప్రోసిటీ ఇన్ అ మచ్ మోర్ ఎక్స్పాండెడ్ సెన్స్. ఇస్ టాక్ ఇన్ 4.11 ఏ థా మాం ప్రపద్యంతే తాం స్థితైవ భజామి అహం. దట్ హాస్ ఆల్ పీపుల్ సరెండర్ అన్ టు మీ హీ రివార్డ్స్ అకార్డింగ్లీ. అండ్ హీ హెస్ ఆల్సో సెడ్ ఇన్ ద 7th చాప్టర్ దట్ మయైవ విహితాన్ హితాన్. ఇన్ 7.22 హీ స్టేటెడ్ దట్ వెన్ ద వర్షిపర్స్ ఆఫ్ ద డెమిగాడ్స్ గెట్ సమ్ రిజల్ట్స్, those results are also given by him. So Krishna reciprocates not only directly in different ways to those who approach him, but he also reciprocates indirectly to the demigods. And that indirect reciprocation is talked about not just in terms of the immediate fruits that they get, but also in terms of the eventual destination that they attain in this verse. So yanti deva prata devan, Krishna is speaking and he is saying that those who worship the devatas attain the planet of the devatas. Pitranyanti pitravataha, those who worship the pitras, they attain the pitras. And bhutaniyanti bhuteja, those who worship the bhutas, they attain the bhutas. Now the word bhutani can have multiple meanings. Bhutani can mean living beings, and Bhutani can also mean a specific category of living beings, that is disembodied living beings, Bhutas. Krishna uses the word Bhuta in both senses. Bijam mam sarva bhutanam, Krishna has said, when he says, I am the seed giving father of the imperishable seed for all living beings. So here Krishna is using the word bhuta in the sense of living beings. But then pretan bhutaganam shanye yajante kamasajanaha, in the 17th chapter when Krishna talks about worship in the three modes, there he says, there he uses the word bhuta along with the word preta. So those who are in the mode of ignorance, pretan bhutaganam shanye, so Ejante tamasajana, those who tamaguna, they worship the bhutas and the pretas. So here Krishna is talking of the word bhuta in the sense of disembodied living beings. Now in common parlance, disembodied living beings are called as ghosts, or they're called as spirits. This word spirit from a spiritual point, from a philosophical point of view, is not accurate, because the disembodied beings are not exactly spiritual. In one sense, all of us are spiritual, and the disembodied beings are not living at a spiritual level of existence. They are living at a material level of existence itself. But still, it's interesting that Krishna talks about worship of ghosts over here. So the acharyas explain that these three refer broadly to worship in the three modes. Krishna also talks about this later when he says, Ajante Satvika Devan Yaksharakshaam Sirajasan Pretan Bhutaganam Shani Jante Tamasajanaha. So he says, those in goodness worship the devatas, those in passion worship the yakshas and rakshasas, those in ignorance worship the ghosts, ghostly beings. So here Krishna is stating that those whose worship is in goodness, worshiping the devatas, they go to the devatas. Those whose worship is in passion, worship the pitras, they go to the abode of the pitras. Now, it's interesting that the Mahabharata says that Maharaj Pandu, when he died, thinking of uniting with his wife, and being struck by a mortal pain at that time because of the curse of the siege. So, because of those circumstances of his death, although he had lived as a virtuous king, he did not attain a very exalted destination. Rather than going to Swarga, he actually went to a relatively lower destination. And one of the reasons why Maharaja Yudhishthira performed a sacrifice, Rajasuya Yagya, was to get Maharaj Pandu to be elevated from where he had gone, which was something like Pitriloka, to Swargaloka. So the essential point of this verse is that all paths do not lead to the same goal. If the Bhagavad Gita were advocating an absolute oneness, then this verse would have no meaning. Not only that, not only does this verse refute the idea of the oneness of all paths, but it refutes the idea of the oneness of all worshipable deities also. According to some schools of thought, the Neo-Vedantists, as they are called, they consider that form is something ascribed on the absolute truth by the worshipper for the convenience of worship. And such forms are meant to be ultimately transcended. So if that were the case, if forms are just simply ascribed and meant to be transcended, then whichever form one would worship, one would get the same destination. But Krishna is telling here that if you worship your ancestors, you will get one destination. If you worship devatas, you will get another destination. So clearly, this verse is quite categorical in terms of it's refuting the idea that there is oneness either in the destination or in the path. There are different paths and they lead to different destinations. A standard impersonalist refutation of the idea of this refutation of the oneness of all paths is, they say that if you say that different paths lead to different goals, and say a train to Mumbai will go to Mumbai, a train to Calcutta will go to Calcutta, you have a very limited conception of the absolute truth. They say the absolute truth is not like Mumbai or Calcutta. The absolute truth is everywhere. And that's why whichever path we go, we take, we will attain the absolute truth. But here we are not talking about the pervasiveness of the absolute truth, but we are talking about the method for accessing the absolute truth. Yes, God is everywhere. God is there. Even in an alcoholic's heart, you cannot perceive the presence of God. Whereas a person who is prayerful in meditation can perceive the presence of God. So, and
the time is 10.
An attainment of God is essentially a process of increasing perception, and that requires purification, and purification requires a particular process. So the more steadily one becomes purified, the more one will be able to attain perception, realization, proximity to Krishna. That's why the important thing is to not confuse the nature of the absolute with the nature of the method for approaching the absolute. The absolute is all pervading, but that does not mean that every path takes one to the absolute. Then, if that were the case, then everyone is on some path. And we could say, if every path would take us to the absolute, then why do we need any path at all? Because where I am is also there, the absolute is there. Why do I need to follow any path at all? So the idea that all paths lead to God ends up saying that ultimately there is no need to do anything to go to God.
of course, this is not what even those who advocate such an idea believe. They also believe that some kind of transformation is required,
and some sort of purification is required. So,
the Bhagavad Gita makes it very categorical that depending on whom you worship, accordingly, you will get that destination. And thus, one will move onwards. And the concluding Krishna said, that those who worship me will come to me. He has earlier told in the 7th chapter that his abode is the 7th chapter as well as the 8th chapter. The 7th chapter has given a hint that the worship, the fruits of the god worship are temporary, antavat. But 8th chapter has clearly stated that actually even the demigods abodes are temporary. So he has thus stated that even Brahma's abode will be temporary, what to speak of Indra's abode. So when Krishna says my worshippers will come to me, that means he is stating that they will attain an eternal destination. So reciprocate, the principle of reciprocation is universal, but the destination is not the same in all paths. We have to choose the right path to get the right destination. Thank you.